From National Public Radio, this is NPR Playhouse.
Welcome to the shadows. Old stories line the shelves of our dusty archives. Stories of dreams, mystery, horror. We would like to bring one of our early radio tales back to life during this half hour. Let's see. H.H. Monroe, better known as Saki, tells stories full of sunlight and humor. And usually, trotting alongside will be some kind of monster for balance. Here's the Baroness to tell just such a story about Esme.
They say that all hunting stories are the same. But my hunting story isn't a bit like any you've ever heard. It happened quite a while ago. All the usual crowd were at the meet, especially Constance Broder. Constance is one of those strapping, florid girls that go well with autumn scenery or Christmas decorations in church.
I have a presentiment that something dreadful is going to happen. Am I looking pale?
Oh, you're looking nicer than usual. But that's so easy for you. Constance and I were well mounted, and we had no difficulty in keeping ourselves in the first flight, though it was a fairly stiff run. Towards the finish, however, we must have held rather too independent a line, for we lost the hounds and found ourselves plodding aimlessly along miles from anywhere. It was fairly exasperating, and my temper was beginning to let itself go by inches when suddenly...
There they go at last! What in heaven's name are they hunting?
Well, apparently it's not a fox.
No mortal fox. It's twice as high. And what an ugly small head. And its neck. Enormous and thick.
It's a hyena. That's what it is. It must have escaped from Lord Pabham's park.
A hyena?
Yes, and it's probably tame. Look, the dogs don't know what to do about it.
Oh, dear. They're running off.
The hyena hailed our approach with unmistakable relief and demonstrations of friendliness.
What are we to do? It's getting dark.
What a person you are for questions, my dear.
Well, we can't stay here all night with a hyena.
I shouldn't think of staying here all night, even without a hyena. We had better make for that ridge of trees to the right. I imagine the highway is just beyond.
I hope it is. What on earth are we to do with the hyena?
What does one generally do with hyenas? If we knew its sex, we might give it a name. Perhaps we might call it Esme. That would do in either case.
Esme?
Here, Esme. Come along. Come along. There must be a gypsy encampment nearby.
Gypsies? Why do you say that?
We just passed a baby, a half-naked gypsy brat.
What was he doing there?
Picking blackberries, obviously. There. Esme has probably frightened it. Esme? Esme? Come along here. Esme? What have you got there? Esme? Esme? Put down that baby. Esme?
Merciful shall we do? What are we to do?
Constance, I am perfectly certain that at the last judgment you will ask more questions than the examining Ferris. Esme, down. Down, Esme.
Can't we do something?
Esme, if you don't put that baby down, I'll thrash you with this whip.
He's running off with the baby into the bushes.
Esme? Esme!
Horrible! Horrible!
Well, Constance, I really don't know what more I can do. We'd best get along. Esme can catch up. Come along.
Do you think the poor little thing suffered much?
Well, the indications were all that way, my dear. Ah, we are saved. There's the highway.
Where?
Up ahead. Didn't you hear the car? There. There. There's another. Ah, here comes Esme. There, Esme. Naughty. You're a naughty hyena.
Can you let that ravening beast trot by your side? Oh, dear. What is it? What is it hanging from his mouth?
I can't quite tell, dear. Now, pay attention. There's the road ahead. Don't run ahead, Esme. The cars won't be able to see you at this hour. Esme, hold. Stay with us. Oh, the silly animal.
Well, I don't think we should worry about that beast.
No, I dare say he can fend for himself.
Oh,
Esme, what did I tell you? What did I tell you?
Ladies, was this your dog? I'm dreadfully sorry.
You have killed my Esme.
I'm so awfully sorry. I keep dogs myself, so I know what you must feel about it. I'll do anything I can in reparation, anything
please,
at all.
Please bury him at once. That yes. much I think I may ask
certainly,
of you.
Certainly, at once, madam. William, bring the spade. No, the spade, William. I saw. What a magnificent fellow. I'm afraid he must have been rather a valuable animal.
Well, he took second in the puppy class at Birmingham last year.
Oh,
don't cry, dear. It was all over in a moment, I'm sure. He couldn't have suffered much.
Oh, look here. You simply must let me do something in reparation.
I couldn't think of it.
Oh, but I insist.
No, I couldn't think of it. But as he persisted, I let him have my address. Lord Pavel never advertised the loss of his hyena. When a strictly fruit-eating animal strayed from his park a year or two previously, he was called upon to give compensation in 11 cases of sheep worrying and practically to restock his neighbor's poultry guards. And an escaped hyena would have mounted up to something on the scale of a governmental grant. The gypsies were equally unobtrusive over their missing offspring. I don't suppose in large encampments they really know to a child or two how many they've got. There was a sequel to the adventure, though. I got through the post a charming little diamond brooch with the name Esme set in a sprig of rosemary. Incidentally, too, I lost the friendship of Constance Brodel. You see, when I sold the brooch, I quite properly refused to give her any share of the proceeds. I pointed out that the Esme part of the affair was my own invention, and the hyena part of it belonged to Lord Pabham. If it really was his hyena, of which, of course, I've no proof.
Esme by Saki. Pat Franklin was the Baroness and Constance Brodel, and Bernard Mays was the penitent driver. Technical production was by John Whiting. And now, a gentleman has just arrived in our studios upstairs to bring you a public service feature about tobacco and its harmfulness. His script was touched up by a famous Russian playwright, Anton Chekhov.
Ladies and gentlemen, so to say, it has been suggested to my wife that I should broadcast here a popular lecture. Well, if I must lecture, I must. It really doesn't matter to me in the least. Of course, I am not a professor and hold no learned degrees. Still in all for the past 30 years, without stopping. I might even say to the injury of my own health and so on. I have been working on questions of a strictly scientific nature. I am a thinking man, and imagine, at times, even I compose scientific contributions. I mean, not precisely scientific, but pardon my saying so, they are almost in the scientific line. Well, for instance, the other day I wrote a long article entitled On the Harmfulness of Certain Insects. My daughters liked it immensely. Immensely, especially the references to the bugs. But after reading it, I tore it to pieces. Well, surely, no matter how well you write, you can never dispense with insect powder. We've got bugs even in our piano. For the subject of this program, I have taken, so to speak, the harm caused to mankind by the consumption of tobacco. Now, I myself smoke, but my wife ordered me to lecture today on the harmfulness of tobacco. So there's nothing I can do. Nothing I can do about that. Nothing I can do. On tobacco, then. It is absolutely of no matter to me. But to you listeners, I suggest that you should regard my present program with all due seriousness. Well, perhaps something unexpected may happen. I particularly crave the attention of the members of the medical profession, who may gather from my lecture a great deal of useful information. Since tobacco, apart from its harmful effects, is also used in medicine. Thus, for instance, if you place a fly in a snuff box, it will probably die from derangement of the nerves. Yes. Tobacco, essentially, is a plant. When I lecture, I usually blink my right eye. But you must take no notice of that. No. Of course you can't see me. Well, it is through sheer nervousness. I'm a very nervous man, generally speaking. And I started to wink my eye on the very day when my wife gave birth to our, so to say, fourth daughter, Barbara. Although, in view of the short time at our disposal, I must not digress from the subject of the lecture. I must observe, by the way, that my wife keeps a music school and a private boarding school. I mean to say, not exactly a boarding school, but, well, there's something in the nature of a boarding school. Well, between ourselves, my wife loves to complain. Oh, about money matters, for instance, but she has stored away some 40,000 or 50,000 rubles. As to myself, I have not a penny, not a penny to bless myself with, not a sou. But, well, what's the good of thinking about that? In the boarding school, it is my duty to look after the housekeeping. I buy the provisions, keep an eye on the servants, enter the expenses in a ledger, stitch together the exercise books, and exterminate bugs. Exterminate bugs. And I take my wife's pet dog for a walk. And I catch mice. Do you know, last night, I had to give out flour and butter to the cook, as we were going to have pancakes today. Well, to be brief, today, when the pancakes were ready, my wife came into the kitchen to say that three of her pupils would have no pancakes, as they had swollen glands. So it happened that we had a few extra pancakes. Well, what would you do with them? What would you do with them? My wife first ordered those pancakes to be taken to the larder. But then she thought for a while, and after deliberation, she said, you, me, you can have those pancakes, you scarecrow. Scarecrow. When she's out of humor, she always addresses me like that, scarecrow, or viper, or Satan. Satan, you see what a Satan I am. She's always out of humor. She's always out of humor. But I didn't eat those pancakes properly. I just gulped them down. Because I'm always hungry. Yesterday, for instance, she gave me no dinner. It's no use, she says, feeding you, scarecrow that you are. Scarecrow. However, I have strayed from my subject and have digressed somewhat from my theme. Let us continue. Though I'll bet you'd rather now hear a story, or listen to a symphony, or some singing. Some singing. In the heat of the battle, we shan't budge, we shan't budge. I don't remember where that comes from. Isn't that funny? I just can't remember where that comes from. By the way, I forgot to tell you that in my wife's music school, apart from looking after the housekeeping, my duties also include the teaching of mathematics, physics, chemistry, geography, history, solfeggio, literature, and so on. For dancing, singing, and drawing, my wife charges an extra fee, although it is I, who am the dancing and singing master. Our music school is at number 13, Five Dogs Lane. Number 13. That is probably why my life has been so unlucky. Through living in a house, number 13. Again, my daughters. Yes, my daughters were born, all of them, on the 13th. And our house has 13 windows. Imagine 13 windows. I counted them. But, well, what's the good of dwelling on all this? My wife is at home at any hour for business interviews. And the prospectus of the school can be had from at the station here at sixpence a copy. You need but write in and ask for them. And if you please, I myself can let you have some. I have some here. I have six copies. And the first six people who phone in can have a copy for threepence. We'll make it threepence. The first six people who phone in. I don't see any phones. Well, perhaps there are no phones. We'll make it twopence if you write in. Oh, very annoying. Very annoying. Yes, the house is number 13. I am a failure. A failure at everything. I have grown old and stupid. Now, I am broadcasting. And to look at me, I am quite jolly. But I have such a a longing. Oh, such a longing to shout at the top of my voice. Or to run away to the ends of the earth. And there is no one I can complain to. I even want to cry. To cry. Well, you may say, you have your daughters, you have your daughters. But what are daughters? What are my daughters? I speak to them, and they only laugh at me. My wife, she has 7 daughters. No, I believe only 6. 6. Oh, no, of course it's 7. The eldest, Anna, is 27. The youngest is 17. Of course, the 7. I am miserable. I have become a fool. A nonentity. But after all you hear before you, the happiest of fathers. After all, it ought to be like that. And I dare say it is not. But if only you knew. If only you knew. I've lived with my wife for 33 years. And I can say those were the best years of my life. I mean, not precisely the best. But generally speaking, they have passed, in a word, like one happy moment. But strictly speaking, curse them. Curse them all. She's not come yet. She's not here in the studio. She's not here, and therefore I may say what I like. You know, I am terribly afraid. Oh, I am. I'm afraid when she looks at me. Well, as I was just saying, my daughters don't get married. They don't get married probably because they're shy. And also because men never have a chance of seeing them. My wife does not want to give parties. She never invites anyone to dinner. She's very stingy. Stingy, ill-tempered, and quarrelsome. Therefore, no one comes to the house. But I can tell you in confidence, my wife's daughters can be seen on holidays at the house of their aunt, Natalie Semenovna, the very same lady who suffers from rheumatism and always wears a yellow dress with black spots, you know the one. Well, there you get real food. I must observe that I get drunk on one wine glass. That's all it takes. Just one. And account of that, I feel so happy. And at the same time, so sad that I cannot describe it to you. I usually recall my youth. For some reason, I long to run away. To run right away. Oh, if you only knew how I long to do it. To run away. To leave everything behind. To run, without ever looking back. Where? Where to? Well, it does not matter where to. Provided I could run away from that vile, mean, cheap life which has turned me into a miserable old fool. Into a miserable old idiot. To run away from that stupid, petty, ill-tempered, spiteful, malicious miser, my wife, who has been tormenting me for 33 years. To run away from the music, from the kitchen, from my wife's money matters, from all those trifles and banalities. To run away. To run away. And then stop. Somewhere, far, far away, in a field, and to stand still, like a tree, like a post, like a garden scarecrow, under the wide heaven. And to look all night long at the still, bright moon over my head. And to forget. once young, you know. Oh, I was. I studied at the university. And I had dreams. I considered myself a man. Now, I want nothing. Nothing but rest. Rest. My wife, she's outside of the studio. I saw her come in. She's waiting for me there. The time is practically up. Oh, look, if she asks you, please, I implore you, tell her that the lecture, the talk, was... that the scarecrow, who I mean, behaved with dignity. Oh, she's looking in my direction. Starting from the premise that tobacco contains a terrible poison of which I have just spoken. Smoking should in no circumstance be permitted, and I venture to hope, so to say, that this, my lecture on the harmfulness of tobacco, will be of some profit to you. I have finished. Dixi et animam levavi. I have finished. Is that...
That was On the Harmfulness of Tobacco by Anton Chekhov. Adapted and performed by Eric Bauersfeld. Sound production was by Jan Paul Vent. Additional technical production for this program was by Jim McKee. Well, that's all for now. Come and visit our archives again for another tale from the shadows. Real soon.